You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Now, here's your host, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy.
Welcome to another edition of the Valor Hour. I am Valor Fights President Tim Loy. I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Kapp. Ed, how's it going, my man?
I'm doing great, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing good. We just came off Valor Fights 50. It was awesome in so many ways. Just a badass event. We're going to dive into it hardcore tonight. We've got our recap panel on here with us as well. We got Alan Poole, photographer extraordinaire. What's happening, Alan?
What's going on, guys?
We got Billy Swanson, Big Sexy, in the house. He was in the house also cornering Joseph Long this past Saturday. What's up, Billy?
I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Rocking and rolling, man. And then we got the Hammer, Chandler Cole, who also just came in on an airplane the day of Valor 50, doing some commentary after some time out in California training with Team Oyama. What's up, Chandler?
What's up? What's up?
Good to have you back, my man. So before we get into our interviews, we got a couple interviews. We're going to talk to Dustin Koppel with Tennessee Top Roller today, and then of course we're also going to talk to Sam McAlpin a little bit later. We'll get into details of that as we go along. But before we get into our Valor 50 recap, Ed, you have got some fan Q&A discussion topics for us to cover as a panel.
That's right. So let's just dive right into that. UFC 25, featuring two title bouts and CM Punk, reportedly drew only 125,000 pay-per-view buys. Billy, what are your thoughts on that, right off the top of your head?
I think that it drew that because people are tired of seeing it be treated as a mockery. CM Punk should not be in the UFC. He never should have got a fight in the UFC. I mean, he's never had a fight before. So how in the hell is he gonna, pro debut in the top promotion in the world? I mean, that's just like it's a bitch slap in the face to everybody else that's in that promotion. So it doesn't shock me because the fans are a lot more interactive now. So I mean the fans see their fighters being treated like shit and they respond to it.
Chandler, what about the two?
That's an interesting take.
Chandler, two title bouts. Do you think that was enough? Like did this card have you interested?
Now, did you say? Did it have me interested?
Yeah, the two title fights, CM Punk aside.
And Chandler's a big pro wrestling fan already, though, keep in mind.
That's right.
Yeah, and even as, throw CM Punk into the mix, I'm kind of excited to see it. I know a lot of fighters feel like it's a smack in the face, but at the end of the day, other sports do stuff with celebrities all the time, and that's how I looked at it. I looked at it as, just like a celebrity thing. It is a piss on the other fighters who work hard, but, money's money, and I figured they thought that they would make money off of it. I'll tell you what my biggest problem was is the way that Mike Jackson, he handled his opportunity. The new guy had an opportunity of a lifetime and kind of, treated it like it was nothing. Like, you could see him in the fight acting like he wasn't even there. Like, that was the biggest thing that really bothered me. I was like, dude, you're 0-1 too. You're 0-1, and you should have finished. You should have finished CM Punk. But I thought the two title fights were awesome. I'm slowly becoming a Kobe Covington fan just because, he got famous off his mouth, but now he's backing it up. And that's what I love about it. And Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero, that was freaking awesome. I mean, you could ask for a better fight. That was an awesome, awesome, awesome fight.
Tim, if you're the UFC and you put pretty much all your cards on the table to only get 125,000 pay-per-view buys, what do you do the next day?
Ooh, man. I think it's kind of – I think it lets them know. I mean, Billy has a point here, I think, in that maybe the fans have spoken in a way because – still, I had intrigue. I still, you know, had I not been doing an event the same night, they would have got my, you know, I would have been in for the pay-per-view because I was still intrigued just to see, you know, has CM Punk improved? Is he at least good enough to knock off this 0-1 guy who also doesn't deserve to be in these UFC? Is he at least to that level yet? So I did have a decent amount of intrigue myself as to what would happen, but yeah, maybe you know, the next day the UFC takes from it that the fans just aren't going to go for the you know, the, no, I don't want to say freak show, but for lack of a better word, like your sideshow type fights.
Alan, do you have any interest in seeing either Mike Jackson or CM Punk fight again in the UFC?
Do I have any what about
interest?
Interest? Oh fuck no, man. Dude, I didn't realize that CM Punk was that bad. I remember him fighting Mickey Gall.
But Mickey Gall's really good.
He's so good, yeah. He's so good. He's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's just – he's a bad motherfucker. But then now watching him fight – was it Mike Jackson?
Yeah.
I was just like – I was kind of sick to my stomach that he was in there, that he was – like, people were watching this and that it represented the UFC. But at the same time, I would have thought that it would have gotten the pay-per-view buys, you know, and I would have justified that just to support MMA. You know, I know it pisses off, you know, the fighters and all that, but if it puts more money and more attention on MMA, I'm for it. But I can't believe that it didn't. You know, I thought that the people that didn't fought, like the whatever, I don't watch.
The wrestling fans.
Wrestling fans, yeah. I would have thought that they would have jumped on this.
Yeah. That's where I'm coming from, too. I would really, even if UFC fans weren't buying it, I would think the interest from the wrestling community would have bolstered it.
Chandler, who are two wrestlers that you'd like to see square off in the Valor Fights cage?
Like WWE wrestlers?
Yeah, just pro wrestlers, yeah.
God, that's a good question. I would like to see Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles. I think AJ Styles, he incorporates like a lot of jiu-jitsu into his performance as it is, you know, whether or not he can really hit it. But I mean, you know, you always question that. Like, so it's something I would want to see how he performs. But at the end of the day, it is wrestling, and what we do is MMA, and it's two different categories. You know, you can't compete where you don't compare. And who knows? I would be interested to just see who, you know, they incorporate such a MMA background into their wrestling. I would like to see if they could do it themselves.
That's a good one.
Tim, a question for you. Are we ever going to see Kid Cash back in the Valor Fights cage?
I don't know. Never say never. You know, I think he may have gotten back into doing some more pro wrestling, maybe. Don't quote me on that. But, you never know. I mean, the last we spoke, he was certainly open to coming back and doing it again. You know, I think that, you know, something like a Roy Sanders, honestly, would love, I think, to have that, to try to knock him off, you know. And that would actually probably be not a terrible fight if I could line it up. But who knows, man? I would like to see him give it another go. I'll have to touch base with him and see.
Boys, that's all we have for questions this week.
All right, cool. Those were pretty good. Those didn't put us on the spot too bad. Those were fun. Well, cool. All right. Well, so we'll move on to our recap now of Valor Fights 50. Before we get into our recap, we will go over our picks panel from last week and the standings, if you will. Going into the week, there were a total of 11 possible picks here. And in entering the week, Billy Swanson had a lead. And we'll see if he's able to hold on to it here. The top picks this week go to, looks like Jeff Hobbs at 9-2. The second best, The second best mark going to Mark Laws and Sawyer Ridge, both at 8-3. Billy Swanson at 7-4, and Alan Poole bringing up the rear at 6-5 on this one. So that is it tightens up the race, but it's just not enough to catch Billy, who ends up with a final tally after in the second quarter with 40 possible picks. Billy Swanson ends at 29-11. Followed very closely by Mark and Sawyer, who were both 28-12, and then followed yet again very closely by Allen and Hobbs, who were 27-13. So just, you know, 1 and 2 picks separating the whole field. So everyone did really well. That's a good percentage for everybody. But congrats to Billy Swanson, who steps into Chandler Cole's slot, if you will, and wins the whole damn thing. The veterans are struggling here. So we'll go over the card here.
I would like to say real quick, it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, winning's winning.
That's right. And so we started the card off, guys, with we only had one kickboxing match this card. Usually we've got more, but this was juniors, featherweights, and it was two kids from Shield Systems going at it. It was Caleb Spangler taking on Zachariah Hammock. Spangler coming in 0-1, Zachariah Hammock 3-0, both guys out of Shield Systems. And to tell you guys the truth, whenever we set this fight up, I thought that, you know, they were going to not straight up work us, but, you know, kind of potentially not just try to completely kill each other and just kind of get some work out there in front of the crowd and whatnot. And that's not what happened at all. They fought their asses off. They went out there to kill each other. Ben Harrison opted not to corner either guy. So you had Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman in one corner and Brian Barbarina in the other corner. So they had the two best, you know, two badass corners there that night and, you know, helping them out. But, man, these guys went to war. But at the end of the day, it was Zachariah Hammock just too much, and he improves to 4-0 with a second-round stoppage over Spangler. Both kids look good. You know, Spangler is put together in just a tough kid, but he's ran into just really tough competition in his first two fights. So hopefully he sticks with it. He's definitely got a lot of potential. Zachariah Hammock kind of emerges as, like, you know, maybe at this point, arguably the top junior in the area right now at 4-0. I don't really see anyone knocking him off right now. And Hark, you know, he's still got two more years before he's even old enough to do MMA. So a champion level wrestler, it makes you think of a Chase Boutwell before they turned 18. So we'll kind of rotate through our panel here to get their take on that, on each of these fights. Chandler, what'd you think about these guys kicking the night off?
Oh, it was awesome, man. It's like you said, man. I figured they would basically have a sparring session. You know, I figured that one of them knew that they had the edge on the other one because they trained in the same gym, but that's not what we saw at all. These guys came out, and you would think that they had a grudge. They were trying to beat each other to death, and especially on the junior level, I love to see stuff like that anyways out of the younger generation, just because it's like a preview of what we're going to see when they're older. So it was awesome. I enjoyed watching it, and I'm sure everyone else here did too.
So the first MMA bout of the night, Logan Wolf climbs to 2-0 with a first-round submission victory over Troy Dickerson. Tim, how is this for a first MMA bout of the night to set things off?
Hey, they both came out on fire, man. Dickerson was a pretty well-put-together kid coming out of Clinton. We didn't know much about him, but he was, you know, pretty tall and rangy. Logan Wolf, of course, gets the takedown pretty early. Troy Dickerson latches onto a guillotine. It was holding on tight. I mean, he was squeezing for dear life and held on to it for a while. I mean, he had him in it for, you know, nearly 30 seconds or so. Eventually, Logan is able to sweep. Gets to the mount during one of the scrambles. Dickerson gives up his back, and Logan Wolf gets the rear naked choke, climbs to 2-0, and is quickly, you know, already 2-0, and he just debuted a couple months back, and he's already, you know, starting to make a name for himself on the flyweight scene.
Billy, what are your thoughts on the first MMA bout of the night?
Yeah, it was definitely it was an exciting fight to watch. You know, Logan Wolf definitely, like Tim said, he's not been around long, but he's came out in a short amount of time and been able to showcase and kind of let it be known that he's a very talented young up and comer. So, I mean, congrats to him. It was a great fight.
Second MMA bout of the night, another guy who's quickly establishing a name for himself, Silas Reynolds, improves to 2-0 with a first-round knockout victory over Bud Cook, who falls to 0-4. Tim, what's your main takeaway from this fight?
You know, Silas Reynolds, we hadn't had a lot of time to really get a read on him because he had just a stellar knockout over Justin Winchester in his debut in January. But this time he was a little more measured. Bud Cook at the same time, you know, he came in 0-3, he dropped, but he'd been fighting way too heavy. So he came down to 150 and he looked a lot more, you know, at home at this weight class. And he was a lot more measured himself. I told Bud afterward, even though he ended up losing, he still was out there and more measured and composed, and it wasn't just a whirlwind. Both guys kind of had a little feeling out process on the feet. Neither guy really getting too much, not too many big shots in, but Bud Cook certainly getting off and you know, from time to time. But Silas Reynolds gets the takedown, and it wasn't long before he transitioned to the mount, and he gets the ground and pound stoppage and proves to 2-0. He's a good prospect.
Alan, are you equally impressed with Silas Reynolds so far?
Yes, I am impressed with Silas. From his first fight, you know, I saw him do the setup for the knockout, and I don't know why, but I just didn't think Silas, you'll probably hear this, but I didn't think he was about it when I first met him. But he's proved me wrong. He's a savage. He will fuck your shit sideways. So, man.
What kind of analogy is that?
Well, anyway, man, yeah, I'm impressed with him, man. Good on you, Silas, and I owe you some pictures. Anyways, yeah, he's holding it down for Knoxville MMA.
Fourth fight of the night, Josh Lewis makes a name for himself in his amateur debut against Chase Price, who is 1-0 going into that fight. Tim, are you impressed with Josh Lewis's debut?
Impressed with both guys. I knew coming in this is going to be really good. A lot of people were overlooking Josh Lewis because, Chase Price had such an awesome debut with that Von Pru choke in Nashville. And he is such a specimen. You know, he's a 6 foot, 6 foot one, 155, just a, you know, strapping dude. Josh Lewis, you know, comes in with a highly decorated kickboxer and wrestler. He just hadn't done MMA yet. The brother of David Lewis, we all know to be very talented. And so I knew he was going to be, you know, very tough. And the size discrepancy was pretty noticeable. You know, Price was quite a bit bigger, but Lewis is so composed out there to be a debut. He boxed up Price pretty good, had him bleeding. In the second round, Price started a little comeback. I thought he was going to get his second win and come back and get it. But ultimately, Lewis just too much and, you know, goes out there and finishes him in the second round. But it's a good performance from both guys. Both guys really, you know, that was a great fight.
Chandler, are you excited to see Josh Lewis back in the Valor Fights cage soon?
Oh, absolutely, man. You know, there was a size difference in height, but, the kid is thick. Like, Lewis is so thick to be a 55er. We were sitting there at commentary, and I was like, no, this kid's big. Like, you know, he attended a great stand-up game. He peppered what's the kid's last name? The Chase kid?
Price.
Yeah, peppered him up, man, and did what he had to do. I thought it was an exciting fight all around. It was super fun to watch. It was definitely super fun to watch.
Amateur heavyweight action. Frankie Padilla, making his long-awaited, highly anticipated debut, falls to Sam McAlpin. First-round knockout. Tim, were you shocked by this fight, or did you see this playing out like?
Hey man, there was a lot of surprised people in that room. I'll tell you that. You know, Frankie had a lot of support in there. The place was shaking when he came out. It was something else. And you know what? Sam McAlpin walked into the Lions Den there, and he really surprised a lot of people. I'll tell you, man. I mean, he looked like he was outsized. The crowd was on him, you know, and he came out and weathered an early storm. Frankie started to slow down a little bit, and Sam just kept coming. So what better way to recap it than to talk to the man himself? Let's get Sam McAlpin on the line and talk to the man himself, because we owe the guy an interview, because all of our picks panel picked against him And when someone goes 5-0 and the panel is incorrect unanimously, then they have their chance to come on here and say their piece. So let's get old Sam on the line. Sam, you there?
Yeah. Hey, how y'all doing?
Doing great, man. We thought we'd get you on the line here. We were just recapping Valor Fights 50. We'd gotten to your fight. And, you know, we realized that the picks panel picked against you 5-0. And whenever the picks panel goes 5-0 and they're wrong, then we owe it to the fighter to come on here and put them in their place, if you will. So, you know, first off, congratulations, man. You got knockout of the night this past weekend. You had a lot of people in that room cheering for Frankie Padilla. You know, he's a big, scary looking dude, but you know, you never backed down, man. You went out there and you traded tit for tat. You know, at one point he had you down and then you got up. And when I was sitting there watching him, when you got up, I was like, oh man, Sam's here to fight tonight. You know, talk a little bit about your preparation for the fight. And then we'll get into talking a little bit about your own show coming up.
Hey, yeah. So all of y'all thought that he was going to get me?
All five of them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Heck yeah.
I was the neutral presenter. I didn't present an opinion.
Yeah, but just
I didn't pick.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Chandler went on the panel, but you do have Billy Swanson and Alan Poole both on the line that you can talk shit to.
Oh, yeah. I kind of... Man, like I said before, a lot of fights, man, I just came in off the couch and stuff, but like this one, y'all know how Trevor Peak fights now, and he don't just fight like that. He trains like that too. You know what I mean? So the guy, when he dropped me, the first thing that went through my head was, you know, crap. And I felt the blood, but then I was like, well, hell, Trevor's done this to me, you know, 15, 20 times. Might as well just get up and start hitting the guy. And, it ended up going my way. I was real proud of it, man. It was awesome.
Okay, man, I got to ask you. So I heard – oh, this is Alan Poole, by the way.
Yeah, what's up, bud?
Hey, how you doing, man? So, okay, a couple things. Well, I'll get to the more important thing in just a second. But first of all, you took an uppercut from Frankie Padilla that sounded like a gunshot. It sounded like – it's like, pow! And I was like, he's dead, you know? And, well, what happened after that? Like, in your world, what was happening?
The main thing at that point was just I knew hit him back. I could tell like he wasn't liking it, you know, as much. And honestly, like maybe it wasn't that way. But to me, it felt like I was brought in for Frankie to just kind of wreck. You know what I mean? Because that's not talking bad. I know how my other fights have looked. I know it looked awful. But me and Trevor was talking before the fight. There was like there's no way. He said we know he's confident about it. We know what they've showed him, and we knew all the footage they'd seen. But I mean, just we knew how much we'd improved. You know what I mean? 8 shots better. But to answer that, when he hit the uppercut, I remember it. I'm not sure if it grazed off or what. I guess from what you said, it did hit. But I just was like, well, I'm gonna keep hitting him now and see how it goes. That didn't hurt as bad as the first one. The worst one was when I hit my knee. That's when I was like, oh dang. But after that, it seemed like I ate his best one, and then it kind of the power tapered off from there.
You were really able to kind of measure him up for that last shot. You know, I think you stunned him with an uppercut of your own, if I can recall, and I had him kind of staggering off, so you could really kind of measure him up for that last one. Were you truly like measuring it for, this is it, this is the one, I'm about to finish it with this one?
I done a thing. It's called baby knuckle. I learned that from a guy named Shelly Bearden up here. And you smack the front hand down, you know, and then you go ahead and pop them. Well, when I hit him, I could tell it hurt him a bit. So I was like, I'm just gonna let loose right quick. And he wasn't able to move a lot. I think he might have been a little tired. So I was like, and at that point, you know, you're just hitting a heavy bag. So I was like, well, I'll throw the best stuff I got. And I was feeling good by then. Like at one point during the fight, I got to do, you know, how Conor McGregor will do a step back and then a cross. I got to do that, and after I got that going, I started feeling good.
One man that has shared the cage with you himself, Billy Swanson's here. Billy, what was your take on the fight?
Man, I came out of the locker rooms. I was back there warming Joseph Long up when this fight happened. Came out of the locker room, and I was sitting on the stage and got to watch it. And I got to say, hats off to you, Sam.
Heck yeah, thank you, sir.
It was,
man, like you smoked me, man, and like you smoked me before, and I knew, I was like, man, we gotta do better than this. We gotta get to practicing. So
You did great. Like, honestly, I saw Frank because when you unloaded that flurry, turned and went to go run, kind of, and you came right around the right shoulder, right hook, and I just watched his knee buckle and him crumble.
Oof. Heck yeah. He was such a big dude, man. I'm not going to lie. Like, I sold it good, you know, and, like, we were cutting up a little bit before the fight. You know, I was just trying to be, you know, cordial and stuff. At the end of the day, we're going to fight whether we're mad at each other, happy. It doesn't matter. But the whole time leading up to it, I was...
My real question, though, Sam, is what about Justin Gooden?
Oh, man, Justin Gooden. He like, okay, let me just tell y'all what happened. And I mean, y'all know me. For the most part, I don't really talk shit. You know what I mean? I just don't. I'm a pretty cool dude. I try to like everybody. Yeah. So he came through the back. I recognized him, and I stuck my hand out to say hey. And the dude is so too cool for school that he just sucked. He sucked me. You know what I mean? Just kept walking. I was like, you dickhead. And then, like, I don't know. It's just wild. I don't know why you act like that.
Lord.
I think he's scared to line it up.
Who knows? That'd be something that could happen down the road. That'd be like some ginger fire right there.
I mean, and as far as that one goes, that one probably goes. I mean, I don't know, man. That one probably goes. But see, I threw the heel kick against Frankie, and it was kind of partly to get comfortable, partly to, you know, get the nerves out. I was nervous because, like y'all said, the crowd was really there for him, man. They turned up good. I think he was game. You know what I mean? I think he was just a little big, you know what I mean? He had so much, he had to keep working. So with Gooden, man, if I throw the heel kick, it really probably, I mean, it doesn't miss. I could heel kick over his head.
I did kick over his head.
No, yeah, I seen you do it. I seen you, man. I watched, you know what I mean?
So
that was good. I liked that one. I was rooting for you hard on that one.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Sam is also the promoter for the Alabama Fighting Championships. They'll be doing their first ever show coming up on July the 14th. Sam, I'll let you have the floor to talk a little bit about that. Pimp out your show a little bit. Well, tell us what's going on.
Yeah, man. I've been working on it for like 6 months. I've been trying to set it up real hard. You know, I want to do it right. You don't want to half-ass it. With it being our first show up here, we want to go, you know, 100%. That way people want to keep coming back. And with the main event, y'all know Greg Hopkins and Trevor Peak, and y'all know how they both fight. That's two just badass kids that run at people and hit them. You know what I mean? As far as main events go, I don't think it can get any better. And then you've got Morgan Hickam versus Danielle Wynn. Danielle Wynn fights at Straight Blast Gym and out of Athens. And everybody knows Morgan. You know, she's just a hoss at it. And then there's just a whole lot of good fights on the card. I really have worked hard on it.
Well, we're excited to see how it shakes out, man. We'll make sure we bring you back on the Valor Hour a week or so out from that so you can kind of give us a little rundown of it. But I can attest that Greg Hopkins and Trevor Peak fight's going to be fire.
That should tear the whole entire house down. That should be not to take anything away from nobody, but that could be fight of the year.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I mean, that's two guys that don't back down, you know, both throw heat. And, you know, I think that you know, Pete probably is a little quicker maybe and has a little more, maybe even a little more pop. But, you know, Hopkins does have some wrestling to fall back on. He just hasn't shown it. So, man, I'm excited to see how it goes down. I'll be there to check it out.
Heck yeah, you'll be there. You'll be there. You bring the wife and everything. And speaking on, you are coming, right?
Oh, yeah. We've already got it on
the
calendar.
Yeah, yeah. Heck yeah. And then
I'll let you have the floor to give any shout-outs. You want to give some love to sponsors, teammates, you know, any kind of shout-outs you want to give, social media, where we can find you. I'll let you have it.
Heck yeah. Speaking on the wrestling right quick, we do have a wrestler from Purdue, Chad Finnerty, fighting as well that night. And that feels like a big deal to me. You know what I mean? You don't see that pedigree all the time anyway. Did y'all say, who all y'all say was on here right quick?
Is
Chandler Cole on here?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up?
Yeah, man. Hey, sorry about the blood, bud.
You're good. He put blood.
Heck yeah, but man, just touching back on the fight, I gotta thank my wife. You know, I gotta thank my training partners, everybody that made me do the work, man. It really was awesome. I felt different going in the fight. I was nervous, but you know, ready to go. I knew things were gonna go a little different. It was nice to get out there and show a much better account of myself than I had before. That other stuff was embarrassing, man. You don't want to show up and do that to people. You want to show up and put on the best show possible. But, oh, yeah, and we're on Facebook, AFC1, Small Town Throwdown. If y'all would go like it, share it, and July 14th, we'd love
All right, there you have it from the man, Sam McAlpin, coming off a big knockout victory this past Saturday night at Valor 50. He'll be promoting his own event, Alabama Fighting Championships, going down July 14th. Check it out. We will be talking more and more about that in the weeks to come. Thanks for the time, Sam. All right, so that was Sam McAlpin recapping a big surprise knockout win. He proved the whole picks panel wrong with a big knockout over Padilla this past weekend. That takes us on to our next one, Ed. What's up next?
Well, this should restore the collective ego of the picks panel. Greg Hopkins, to nobody's surprise, on the panel, improved to 5-0 with an impressive first round knockout over Joe Buher. Tim, what was your takeaway on this fight?
You know, that was both those guys looked like they were ready. I knew that one was going to be a finish either way. I thought Hopkins would either knock him out or Buher would maybe submit him, Buher a purple belt. But he just wasn't ever able to get the fight where he needed it, you know. And Hopkins was able to stuff the takedowns. Again, as we just talked to Sam, Hopkins has got good wrestling that you don't see because he hasn't had to use it. He just boxes people, but the wrestling's there, and he used it to keep the fight where he wanted it, which was standing, and was able to hit a nice hook to behind Buher's ear that got him off balance, and then he smelled blood and finished him off.
Chandler, 5-0, Greg Hopkins, is he a top welterweight prospect right now?
Yes, dude. I think Greg's a great athlete, and I talked to him after the fight, and he told me that his goal was to go pro. And he was like, man, he was like, you know, I'm just trying to find some good fights. I'm like, they're out there. You just got to tell Tim Loy. I was like, you tell Tim Loy you want top notch, and he'll go out and find them. And I was like, and if that's what you want, if you take them out, man, he said, I'm 30 years old. And I was like, yeah, you know, fought you a super tough amateur fight. I was like, go ahead and make that pro debut. I think he could easily go pro, and I think he's proved it. I think he's definitely proved that in his last couple of fights.
Right after that, Michael Douglas, the lightweight, not the actor, climbed to 6-4 with a nice first-round submission victory over Logan Crowley, who falls to 2-1. Tim, what was the big factor in this fight?
Man, it came down to Douglas being just way too skilled on the ground. You know, it was this one was one that I really just didn't know how it was going to go because it was without a doubt the hardest test that Crowley had been up against yet. But he'd been just like a buzzsaw through everybody up to that point. Douglas, you know, he's a guy that is, you know, he's hot and cold, to be honest. There's times when he looks like a champion world beater. There's times when, you know, he doesn't come to the table, you know, with his A game. This time he came to the table with his A game, and you know he had been really looking forward to making his Valor debut. He hadn't fought for us before, and I think it was a situation where he really wanted to make sure he was ready. You know, he was really wanting to make sure he was ready for this step up in competition and to be, you know, to be successful. And he looked great. You know, he got Crowley to the ground. Crowley was very game and bucking hard from underneath, but just never could get his position back. Douglas held position the entire time, and he got a head and arm choke there with about 30 seconds to go. Crowley never tapped. I mean, he fought till the end, but eventually went to sleep. And, you know, he will, you know, I talked to him. He's still very, you know, upbeat about things. Yeah, doesn't have a great taste in his mouth after getting that first loss, he said. So he's going to, you know, get with the gym that is going to get his ground game up. And good for him because he's got a lot of potential. I think with the proper training, he could certainly be a top contender. Mike Douglas, on the other hand, you know, that's a big win for him. A good showing in his first fight for us. And I'm excited to have him back and probably get him immediately into a title picture. I would love to see. I'd love to see him, you know, potentially taking on a Joseph Long or something like that.
Alan, how do you grade Michael Douglas' debut?
How do I what?
How do you grade it? A, B, C.
Yeah. How do you grade Mike Douglas's performance?
Man, I was pretty impressed with Mike Douglas. I mean, even from the weigh-ins, you could see he wasn't intimidated at all. And you know, it set off. It set off the, I hate to say it this way, I can tell when someone loses their temper or not in the pictures, especially if they're like me and they're ginger, because their ears just flame red and their face turns red. He, like, he could tell he lost his cool. And where, you know, his opponent was just chilling, you know, just like he was so ready. And I think it's good overall for both fighters, because the ground game needs to be worked on.
For Crowley.
For Crowley, yes. The ground needs to be worked on for Crowley. And, you know, and we need – last thing. Sorry, I'm jumping all over the place. This was probably one of the best examples I've seen of where you just can't out-tough the technique. You know, technique is going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and when it comes to the same weight classes anyway – if someone is better skilled and has better technique, you just can't tough your way through that shit. You know, you're going to get eaten up like that, and I think that's ultimately what happened.
Eighth fight of the night.
I think he would have had a better chance if he hadn't cut his mullet.
I would have to agree. I cannot argue that.
He's like Samson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eighth fight of the night saw Joseph Long improve to 3-0 with a second round submission over late replacement Chase Wender. Tim, what are your thoughts on the third to final fight of the card?
It was another really good one, man. You know, Wender was arguably winning on the scorecards at that point, had done a pretty good job of keeping top position. Long was still very active in seeking, you know, triangles or submissions from the bottom. But, you know, how judges be sometimes. And so, like, you know, there's a good chance that Wender was leading the scorecards. But, like I said, Long was so active on the bottom, constantly fishing for submissions. Finally got the Kimura, I believe, in the second round, late in the second round, maybe, and improved to 3-0. Props to Chase Wender for stepping up and taking that fight on short notice. He took that fight on about 3 or 4 days' notice after Caleb Miller fell out. So props to him for stepping up, and a good performance by both gentlemen. And like I said, and after the last one, I'd like to see Joseph Long and Mike Douglas kind of line up now for a strap.
Billy, you cornered Joseph Long in this fight. What did you see in the second round as far as, I guess, difference is in how Joseph was approaching this fight? What was the turning point, do you think, in the second round?
Well, honestly, it was definitely kind of both. I think they were both filling each other out the first round. You know, both knowing each other was a, you know, higher caliber amateur fighter. But, Joseph did great, man. He did exactly what I thought he was going to do. You know, he hits hard. People don't understand that. They hear me say that and they think I'm kidding, but he literally, in the second round, he buckled Chase with a jab. Like, I mean, his knees buckled from a jab. So, I mean, Joseph really hit hard. But I want to point out the fact that, and David's going to kill me for pointing this out, but in between rounds, I was in his corner. And me and David were in the cage, and David was telling him, you know, giving him pointers on his striking. We were talking about defending the takedown. And then I told him, because it's happened to us a couple times. It happened with David, with Ben Bennett, and, you know, a couple of our other fighters, where we'll be winning the striking and people will know that we're good on the ground. And instead of trying to advance and pass and opening up, they'll just kind of take you down and hug you. And in the first round, when Chase had Joseph down, Joseph had went for that triangle a couple times. Well, Chase had stopped kind of opening up and he was starting to flare his elbows more. I told Joseph right before the clicker for the 10 seconds and for the corners to go out, I said, hey, if he takes you down again and he starts hugging you and he's not opening up, I was like, instead of forcing the triangle, I was like, keep his wrist isolated, and if you sit up, you'll sit right up to that Kimura. And then sure enough, boom, he had to scramble off the wall a little bit and then sat right up to it and was able to finish the fight.
Hey, can I jump in here, Billy? So I just wanted to make sure
it's
that
Professor Swanson.
Oh, sorry, Professor Swanson.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out. Like, so while I was, taking shots at the fight, and like right when he grabbed the Kimura, I hear it sounded like someone was having an orgasm. I hear, yes, yes, yes. And I was like, what the hell? Like, it snapped me out of like what I was doing. I was like, what the hell is that? And it was Billy. And I was wondering, did something happen in your pants when he grabbed that kimura?
No, all right, Alan, you're just pissed off I called you on skating last time. But no, you're right. I did get excited because I was very, honestly, I'm a very violent person.
Just to remind me.
And so any moment I see one of my teammates in a position to rip someone's arm off, you best believe I'm screaming, break it.
On the co-main event, Chase Bowell further staked his claim as the top amateur 135-pound prospect, maybe in the nation, with a unanimous decision victory over Javier Carbajal, defending his title. Tim, how impressed are you with Chase Bowell?
I was impressed with both guys. You know, I think Bowell was a little disappointed he didn't get the finish, but Carbajal's tough, man. And, you know, as we said, going into this, you know, he's kind of known to be a little one-dimension, but his one-dimension is, like, really freaking good. And I had it 1-1 going into the third round, and Chase managed to pull it out there. I don't think there was any much doubt that it was 2-1 Chase. I had him in the first and the third. But Carbajal had a good second round and was dangerous the whole time. Chase has, like, gotten bigger, too, if anybody noticed. Like, he's bulked up, and he was just, like, noticeably bigger than Javier, who I believe can make 25. So, yeah, good showing from both guys. And Chase Bowell keeps rolling.
Chandler, who are you more excited to see make their pro debut, Billy Swanson or Chase Bowell?
Oh, Chase Bowell for sure. no, I'm just kidding. I love Billy to death. Everybody knows he's, like, one of my training partners, and I'm super excited to see what his future holds. But Chase Bowell is my favorite amateur fighter, period. And I'm super excited to see what his future holds. Kid's like 19, and, I mean, he's incredible. But I'm super excited to see both of theirs. Come on, don't put me on the spot like that. Sick. Nah.
Hold on. What was said? I was zoned out.
He said that he loves Chase Bowell's his favorite.
No, I did say that, but I said
it's okay. Chase Bowell is my favorite amateur fighter too.
See,
because I'm going professional, bitch.
First of all, that's what the question was. Said, who are you more excited to see go professional?
Oh
no, they're both super talented. I think they'll both transition well. I think that they're honestly. I think Billy and Chase. This ain't me sucking Billy either, because every time we see each other, you would think that we hate each other. But I think they'll both transition well. I think they're pros right now fighting amateurs. So I'm excited to see both their careers.
Finally, in the main event, James Conway silences Knoxville, closes out the international Daddy. With a stunning first round knockout victory over Jason King, one of the area's most popular fighters to claim our vacant welterweight championship. Tim, what were you thinking, I guess, after the ref called this fight off?
Well, to preface, the title is still vacant. Conway wasn't eligible to win the title as he came in overweight. He had some dehydration issues midweek where he had to go to the ER for some issues, and he ended up having to take an IV there against his will, if you will. And that kind of got his weight up to where he couldn't make the 170-pound championship weight. But Jason King did make the championship weight, so he was eligible for the title. Conway ended up coming in at 176. He did put in a hell of an effort, so I'm not here to dog on him at all. He got there early to the site. Mark Walls got with him and they got him from like 182 or 183 to 176. You know, so there was certainly a 100% effort put into the cut, but ultimately wasn't able to make championship weight this time. Good performance from both guys. I thought the stoppage was a little early, personally. But at that said, you know, it's the referee's decision. I thought that a good 80% of the shots that were thrown were being blocked by Jason's gloves. If you watch the video, you'll see as much. And he was starting to kind of come up right as he stepped in. That said, you know, don't want to take anything away from James Conway because he had a great performance, you know, had a real close to a rear naked choke that was real deep. I thought that was going to be it. And, you know, I think Jason King 3 years ago, 4 years ago, probably would have tapped to that. But he fought his way out of it, showed a lot of improved wrestling as well. ultimately, Conway kept himself in good positions. You know, there was at one point, I believe Jason had him mounted and he was able to just force his, you know, buck off the cage and reverse position there. And so hats off to both guys, you know, great performance from both gentlemen. You know, I know King is going to be eager to get that taste out of his mouth and bounce right back in there pretty quick. So a good chance we'll see him in July. And Conway, I believe, will be fighting for the M1, the road to M1 thing in August. So we'll keep an eye on him as well.
Tim, is this a fight that you could see us running back at some point in the future?
Yeah, I said that night because, in the future, maybe Conway makes the weight and there's a little bit of controversy on the stoppage. I think it's definitely something that we could see, going back again if all parties were interested.
Alan, what are your thoughts on the main event?
Well, I definitely was disappointed. You know, I wanted Jason King to win because I'm around him. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm friends with him, but, you know, we're friendly, I guess. And, man, that sucked. It looked like Jason was kicking his ass in the beginning. At least maybe I'm crazy, but I thought that Jason had the upper hand there for a while. And then it's kind of... Yeah, then it just kind of went back and forth, and then I don't know, man. And as far as the stoppage goes, it's hard to say, man. I remember being like okay with it, but you know, I was looking at Jason to see if he was okay. Like when he was, it looked like he was still dazed, but he was still coherent. And so I don't know. Like I don't know. I know Eric. I don't know what Eric said, but I know he went flying past me to get to the referee. I don't know what. What he said, but it seemed as though he may have protested. So I don't know.
I saw an irate Jason Kubik at Case. that I feared for the referee's life for a moment.
I didn't even know he was there until I saw pictures.
Yeah, he's like, wow.
Yeah.
And then we had one fight that didn't happen.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we can talk about that, I guess, real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, what happened with that? I wasn't understanding what happened with that.
Me either, yeah. Honestly. We were supposed to have Shanna Young against Jennifer Haas Nixon. Both ladies showed up. Both ladies made weight. There was an agreement in the contract as Haas Nixon is generally fights at 145 and Young is normally at 125. So there's an agreement in the contract, both agreed upon by both ladies and both through that contract as well as text messages, that they would reweigh again on fight day and be 145 again, as Nixon had claimed that she walked at 144. Shanna Young walked, at the time was walking around 138, 139. And so that was agreed to. When that was brought back up, that became a problem on Friday. With a lot of back and forth. And then after that, she's gone. She disappeared, no longer coming messages or calls, and skipped out and just left, essentially. So the commission awards Shanna Young a forfeit win.
Wow.
So what you think about that?
Shoot, do you see Shanna Young? Wow. I wouldn't show up either.
Yeah.
Oh, your wrist was tight, Shannon Young.
What's that?
Sawyer Rich wouldn't fight Shannon Young.
So yeah, Shannon kicked Sawyer's ass.
I tried to take her down 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went down. Valor 50. It was a blast. It's the final show at the International. Before that venue, staple venue for Knoxville Entertainment, closes its doors. So we were privileged to be the last event there, and they really threw down. The production was incredible. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man, definitely.
That wraps it up for our recap of Valor Fights 50. It was an amazing event, and we will turn our heads to Valor Fights 51 on the horizon, July 21st in Johnson City.
But before we head out for the week, we've got one last interview. We've got Dustin Koppel, the head man for Tennessee Top Roller, getting ready for their next big event going down next Saturday, June 23rd in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to talk to him now and get the lowdown on that big event. All right, on the line, we have got Dustin Koppel. He is the promoter for Tennessee Top Roller, one of the top grappling circuits here in the state of Tennessee. They've actually branched down into some other states as well. They're getting ready for their next event. It's coming up next Saturday, June the 23rd. That'll be Tennessee Top Roller 7 going down in Nashville, Tennessee at Lancaster Christian Academy. As always, Dustin, you get the 20 Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu matches for $20, so it's a great value. How's it been, man? It's been a little bit since we talked to you.
Yeah, it has. We just did our circuit challenge where we got the idea to, you know, there's a lot of jiu-jitsu tournaments, but we want to reward people for their efforts. And we had six people that we sent to Worlds for the IBJJF tournament and, you know, paid their plane ticket and paid for their registration. So that's what kept us busy in the couple months. And then we're excited to put on this show, partnering with Fuji once again, June 23rd. So definitely have a pretty sweet card stacked up for this one.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. Let's dig into the card here. What's some of the matches that really stand out? You know, just kind of looking at it myself, I see Joe Bays is on there. That's a name that everyone should know. And some other top grapplers that we've seen on the Valor cards, like a Giovanni Ortiz.
Yeah, so we got five that I picked for you guys tonight just to kind of talk about. So we'll start with the Joe Bays versus Breck Still. Breck Still's he's been a very, very active competitor. And we all know Joe Bays has always been a no-gi guy, but he's phenomenal in gi as well. And this is actually going to be a black belt gi match for Joe. And Breck has just been, like I said, phenomenal as well. So that'll be a very interesting matchup right there. We have Elijah Carlton, who has traveled all over the country, done Fight to Win and whatnot. He's going to be actually having two matches. He'll have one versus Michael Jacobs, who's a black belt out of Kentucky, which will be an advanced no-gi match. And then also another one versus Tyler Jackson, who's out of Giovanni School, Jiu-Jitsu Nation out there. And, he's been a very, very talented grappler as well. Then we have Chuck Mitchell, who's a 10th Planet guy down in Decatur, versus Giovanni Ortiz. So that'll definitely be a good one. And then we have another black belt gi match, Jason Matherly versus Donnie Bowen. So definitely some high caliber guys. And we have some kid matches going on, a female match. And once again, a lot of top blue belts and purple belts around here. So
it sounds like a stacked card, man, for sure. What's it been like? You know, now is this, if I'm not mistaken, this is your first foray into Nashville, correct?
Yeah, we're definitely excited. Once again, partnering with Fuji, so it's always easier that way. And he told me that he had one going on June 23rd, and we Sean Hammonds and I agreed to it. And you know, we're going to be putting on the show right after their tournament in the morning. So we're excited to go in a pretty decent venue that he has there, and you know, we're excited to see how Nashville does.
Yeah, it can't go wrong with a guy like Sean Hammonds there, synonymous with jiu-jitsu there in the Middle Tennessee area. Ed, Dustin's been, really, really hard at it here over the past year, putting together a nice BJJ circuit. Anything for him?
Yeah, Dustin, what's been the biggest obstacle that you've had to overcome to get to where you are now?
Really, the one thing that I see, and I'm sure Tim's dealt with this too, is when you put all this hard work into getting matchups, and then, oh, hey, I forgot I had a wedding. Oh, hey, I forgot that I have this. Or, oh, hey, I forgot that. And just having to constantly find those matchups and scrambling. But, you know, we do have our few key guys who always stick with us and are always constantly wanting to be on the show. But, I mean, you know, I've been very blessed to know the jiu-jitsu community and work with a lot of people. So, they've been supporting us. But really the main thing that I saw was just getting dropouts and things like that.
So what would you say is kind of on the horizon for you guys? You know, we've gone through the circuit challenges. The guys that girls that have qualified for the, you know, for the Worlds there. What do you guys kind of have cooking next?
So, yeah, we have a few more shows that we're getting in the books right now. And then we're going to once again launch another round of the Circuit Challenge here shortly, too. We'll be doing that later this year. And then another thing, too, that we're hopefully going to be start focusing on is getting other states to license through National Top Roller. And that's something that we're going to be launching here shortly, too. So that way we're starting to expand the brand into other states. And we're just kind of perfecting the systems right now and getting everything going and proof of concept for people that are looking for the opportunity to kind of run their own show.
I like it, man. I like it a lot. Well, before, you know, before we let you go here, I'm going to let you give some shout outs where everyone can find, you know, Tennessee Top Roller on social media, where, how they can follow along for upcoming event, you know, dates and whatnot, all the information for Tennessee Top Roller, any sponsor shout outs, all that kind of stuff. I'll give the floor to you.
So we definitely check out our website, TennesseeTopRoller.com. We do a lot of our matchmaking and event planning through our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TennesseeTopRoller. We do have Instagram, Tennessee Top Roller. So a lot of those, definitely going to give a shout out to Fuji. They're doing great things with their jiu-jitsu competitions. We have the Snack Shack, which is someone who comes in and then they do all the concessions for us. So we've had a few sponsors in the past, and, you know, shout out to those people that have been around and continue to support us as well.
There you have it from the man himself, Dustin Koppel, the lead man for Tennessee Top Roller. They get ready for their seventh event as Tennessee Top Roller 7. It's going down next Saturday, June the 23rd in Nashville, Tennessee, going down at Lancaster Christian Academy. Tickets are just $20 for 20 BJJ matches. Gets 500, get in free. Once again, we appreciate the time, Dustin. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that does it for another edition of the Valor Hour. For my co-host, Ed Kapp, and our guest this week, Chandler Cole, Billy Swanson, and Alan Poole, I'm Tim Loy. Signing off for another edition of the Valor Hour. Be sure to check us out and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. Make sure you share it on all your social media platforms to get more and more people in on the conversation each and every week. Once again, we'll talk to y'all next week. This has been another edition of the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
You can't just sit there and go, well, it's the early weigh-ins of that's why we're having so many fighters miss weight. Now, are there probably, you know, a certain percentage of the situation where the early weigh-ins play into it? Yes. But I'll bring up two recent examples. Do you think the early weigh-ins played into Darren Till missing weight? No. If the weigh-ins were at 4 o'clock as opposed to 9 a.m., he still would have missed weight. Mackenzie Dern, same situation. It wouldn't have mattered if the weigh-ins were 5 hours later. She was still going to miss weight. And there's been a lot of tweets about this. There was a tweet on Tuesday, and I totally agree with this tweet from John Morgan of MMA Junkie, where he tweeted, maybe in the minority, but I think dumping early weigh-ins would be an awful idea and not a decision made with fighter safety as a primary concern. Look forward to hearing what new ideas are in play. Old way with fighters dehydrated for hours during transport to arena, etc. Can't be the answer. And I love what he said there in that first part of his tweet, where he said, this is not a decision made with fighter safety as a primary concern. Of course, Dana White was on the UFC Unfiltered podcast, where he basically noted that they wanted to go away from these early weigh-ins.
I agree with you in that there needs to be communication from the fighters to the promoters to figure this thing out. There really does. But I just don't think that's possible. I mean, Dana White is the type of guy who talks a big game, and more often than not, he does create kind of an unfair world where he has a man, there's a bird talking, and I just, Bird, I don't want to hear your opinion. But he is a guy who really reminds me of like a hardcore dictator. And it seems like he kind of puts his foot in his own mouth. So I don't think those discussions are going to happen, Jason. But one thing I want to point out is that this is a two-pronged deal. If fighter safety is important, it's obviously one of the goals here.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.